Welcome to Speaking of Grace, the weekly message podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida. We're a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-generational congregation committed to our mission of loving people into a lifelong friendship with God. We are committed to our vision of being a church without walls, fully engaged in serving the people of our community. Thank you for joining us as we continue Speaking of Grace.
Odds were stacked against us. When something good happens to you, I don't know about you guys, but I to what brought me here. And you wake me up in the middle of the night in the summer times, making me run up a hill, making me do push-ups, screaming at me from the sideline of my games at 8 or 9 years old. Here, you made us believe. You kept us off the street, put clothes on our backs, food on the table. When you didn't eat, you made sure we ate. You went to sleep hungry. You sacrificed for us.
Any of you remember that speech from 2014? Yeah, considered one of the truly great MVP NBA speeches of all time, Kevin Durant in 2014, thanking his mom for helping him attain what he attained and saying, you know what? And the reality is, you're the real MVP here today. And just one of the beautiful tributes you'll ever see to a mother. And I just, as we start off this Mother's Day weekend, just wanted to, you know, help you be inspired to say something or the mother that raised you. The person that raised you this weekend, make sure that you reach out to them and let them know what they meant to you. And so we're starting a sermon series called Don't Forget, as I mentioned at the very beginning. It's easy to forget things. And one of the things I think that's easy to forget is sometimes I think we choose to forget things. And maybe that's not always a good thing. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today. I got to tell you, moms are pretty important. My kids had the blessing of spending 5 summers as they were growing up camp up in Middle Tennessee. And you can see a picture of them at one point with a couple of our staff. It was pretty cool to have 60 to 70 brothers and sisters looking out for you all summer long. So I think that they're pretty fortunate to be able to do that. But I will also say that one of the difficulties of it was that I wasn't maybe, let's not use the word maybe. I was not the father I would like to have been during that time period, because when you are responsible for the lives of, anywhere from 120 to 250 people, young kids that trusted you to return them in better condition than they gave them to you, that can be a pretty big responsibility. And for me, I would start having nightmares in March before summer camp would begin about all the horrible things that could go wrong and what I needed to do to make sure that those things didn't happen. Those work weeks were generally 18-hour days, often 6-7 days a week, very busy. And so my kids, they had the camp to run around, and they also had Rochelle. Rochelle made her full-time job taking care. That's what her job was to watch the kids while I was pretty involved with things. But occasionally something would come up at camp where I needed her to help with something. And one of those times was a particular day where we had a camper who had to be taken to the emergency room for some sort of sickness or something that was going on. And one of our protocols was that we never would send a camper with only one staff member. You always needed to have at least 2 people going. And so that particular day, everybody was tied up. And the person that we needed, I said, Rochelle, I need you. I need you to go with the nurse and take them to the emergency room. And Rochelle said, sure, I can do it. Just make sure that you remember to watch out for Kyle and Eric. Kyle is okay. Kyle, I think that week was a camper in one of the cabins, but Eric was not old enough to be in that particular camp, and so he did normally, which was free roaming the camp. And so I said, yep, I got this. I will do that. Eric, where are you going to be? Oh, Dad, I think I'm probably going to hang around the cabin and maybe just play around the cabin for a while. Cool. That's great. Well, the morning started getting pretty hectic. There were things going on. One of those things was that there was some bad weather coming our way. And in Middle Tennessee, bad weather can come quick, particularly where we were at. And so I put out an alert to our staff, hey, be aware. This is tornado time. Toes, you know, be paying attention, be aware of what's going on. And then I'm taking care of all the disciplinary issues, all the staff issues, everything that's going on. And suddenly the alert goes off on my phone that we are now in a tornado warning. Okay, I know what to do. We practice this. We have a protocol called Code Green across the radios. That means immediately, no matter what you're doing, where you're at on the camp, you head for the tornado shelter that you've been designated to go to. And I got to tell you, I was pretty proud of myself. Everybody shelter in 5 minutes. 5 minutes flat in the tornado shelter. And as I'm sending out this code green, Rochelle arrives back with our camper. And I've just said code green. She arrives back with the nurse and the camper, and she looks at me and says, "Where's?" But I got all the other campers in. And I had this panicky moment, like I have taken care of 150, 200 kids that aren't mine, and I don't know where mine is. And I have to tell you, I have an amazing staff. Nathaniel, one of my staff members, knew that I was busy. He knew that Eric was playing on his own, and he had gone and found Eric and brought into the tornado shelter. But there was that moment of panic where I didn't know where my kid was at. And my wife was like, "You had one job." I was like, "Well, I had a lot." "You had one job." That's why I'm Jesus' parents. I mean, yeah, they had the Son of God to take care of, and yeah, in Luke 3, he comes up missing. Jesus is 12 years old. He's in Jerusalem. It's a big deal. Age. This is really his first Passover, kind of in a more manly role. And he gets to go. He kind of is taking on that older persona. You know when your kids are not really old, but they're like, you know, anyway. Kind of like when my kids. I was like, "Yeah, you're an adult, but you're not an adult. You know, let's just be honest." And Jesus is 12. And so at that time, that place, he was considered kind of an adult. And he's in Jerusalem. They're in Jerusalem. They're having Passover. Passover gets done, and it's time to go home. Sometimes people would not just get into their car and drive away. They would travel as a group for protection, because you needed a large group of people to thwart off, bandits and other things like that. So what would generally happen in these large groups is the men would usually be kind of at the front of the group. The children would kind of be bringing up the rear. So which group did Jesus fit into? Well, if you're Joseph, he's like, "Well, he's old enough to be up here with me, but he could still be back there with mom." And if you're mom, you're like, "Well, he's a man now, so he must be up with dad, or, you know, in the middle playing with the other kids, you know, he's with us." The Bible says that they got a day's journey down the road before they realized Jesus was missing. I know the feeling of panic. I don't know exactly, but I know what it feels like, because I know where's Eric when there's a tornado coming. And they immediately head back to Jerusalem and they start looking. Spend 3 days, 3 days looking through Jerusalem for Jesus. 3 days. Have you been missing your child for 3 days? I mean, I grew up in the 80s and 90s where they had to put stuff on TV saying, where's your child at 10, you know, at midnight or whatever, right? You remember that? But even my parents didn't lose me. 3 days, they look for him. Finally, they find Jesus in the temple. And I want you to remember what Mary's response is at this. She doesn't say, oh, Jesus, I'm so sorry for losing you. I just feel horrible as a mother that I would have somehow missed that you were not with me. And Joseph didn't say, oh, son, I didn't pay attention and make sure you were with us before we left off. No. Mary says, how could you do this to us? Your father and I have been terrified. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but not much. Your father and I are terrified. How could you do this to us? Which Jesus responds, well, didn't you know that I would be in my father's house? And this is the first time where Jesus really acknowledges who he really is. That Joseph is kind of not his real dad. He's in the temple with his true father. But I'm not judgy of Mary because I would have said the exact same thing. Don't you know what you did to me? Because I think my reaction with Eric is like, whoa, why weren't you here, you know? Because I was playing. I didn't know there was a tornado. But what's interesting to me is that after Jesus is found, this is the words about what happens next. Jesus returned to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. And his mother stored all. Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and all the people. One of the comforting things for me as a parent is that Jesus' parents weren't perfect. And yet, still honored, respected, and loved them. So much so that when Jesus is on the cross being crucified, he doesn't forget his mom. That she is taken care of. It's a beautiful thing. And I think too often we go ahead and make Mary and Joseph saints, which they weren't. They were imperfect people. Good people, but they were imperfect people. They weren't perfect parents. So what does it mean when I say don't forget the people who raised you? I think a lot of times we tend to, when we have this talk, we're going to talk to you about parents, that, you know, that fifth commandment, which is important. But this is a different kind of sermon today that I want to talk to you about. Because I want to talk to you about the benefits of remembering the good and the bad about the people who raised you. And I know that might make you feel a little, right? Oh, Ken, we should only remember the good things. Well, I'm going to tell you why I think that's a bad idea. I'm going to tell you why I think it's good for us to remember both the good and the bad. So let's start off with the good. Why is it important to remember the good things about our parents? Raised with different parents. Some of you had amazing parents, like pristine childhood, right? And some of you have childhoods that you don't want to remember whatsoever. It was horrific and awful. And then there's the majority that are in between somewhere. So what's the benefits of remembering the good no matter where you are on that spectrum? The first benefit of remembering the good things about the people who raised you is that it creates a firm foundation that not everything in the world is bad. When you remember the good things about your parents, the good things that they did as they raised you, it creates a world where you can find some safety. Where there are some things that can be counted on, where there are good things that happen. And I want you to remember a very, very, very rare person who has no good attributes whatsoever. And so if you look at your parents and you're willing to go ahead and look at, no matter how horrible your childhood is, if you look at, there's probably something in the people who raised you that you can say, well, that was good. And when you're able to identify it, it will help you also grow in your resilience. I can go ahead and be resilient in what happens in my life. When we recognize the strengths and sacrifices of our caregivers, it allows us to identify that we have probably inherited from them or learned from them. That was good about mom. That was good about dad. That was good about the person that raised me. I want to make sure I have that. I want to have that be a part of me. It creates resilience. The other thing that I transition us into why it's important to remember the things that aren't so good in our childhood is that it cultivates, when we remember the good and the bad, it cultivates nuance and empathy. We live in a world that makes things this way all the way over here or that way all the way over here. Either it's all good or it's all bad. But even Hollywood's getting away from that. Remember all the old time movies where the bad person was always bad, there was nothing good about them? And you know, remember those old movies like bad, 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 and never do anything wrong? That's not the way movies work today, is it? Today, if you watch movies, and I'm not saying you should, but if you do, you'll know that Hollywood has done something that's actually accurate. They've recognized that even bad things sometimes, and even good people do bad things sometimes. And sometimes in Christianity, Christians are really bad at developing nuance and saying, you know what? It can be a little bit of that. And the other part of it is when you're able to say, yeah, you know what? There were good things about my parents and then there were rough things about them. You can also have empathy for your parents. Maybe they were doing the best they could based on the way they were raised. Now, that's not an excuse, okay? I'm not handing that out as an excuse. What I am saying is in our own personal life, as we're looking at those people who raised us, perhaps it can give us the ability to have some nuance and empathy for people who raised us. So why should we remember the bad? This makes people really uncomfortable. Like, no. Focus on the good. Only talk about what's good. Why should I think about what's bad? Well, here's the reason. Because when you don't do that, when you aren't honest intellectually about the flaws that your parents had, it will create what we would call cognitive dissonance. And what that means is intellectually, you know that your parents, like up here, you know that your parents weren't perfect. You know there are problems, but you're trying to live out a different reality. And that creates a lot of anxiety. It creates a lot of pain when we're not honest with ourselves, when we try to cover it up and tell ourselves a lie. One of the worst people on earth that you can lie to is yourself. Because when you intentionally try to do that, you will find that it has serious health consequences and emotional consequences. So being honest about the people that raised you, about the bad side of things, can help you create what psychologists are going to call cognitive congruence. It's like, yeah, my parents weren't perfect, but go back to the empathy. Or say, you know, that wasn't good. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was not the right thing. It wasn't okay. It also helps you become you. You know, there's only one person that I've been told to imitate, and that's Jesus. And sometimes when we're not willing to face the parts of our parents that aren't perfect and that are problematic, we start imitating them and thinking it's a good thing. We're not being honest. Oh, that was tough, but Well, no, don't put a butt on there. That wasn't right. Period. Now I'm going to become a part of my parents, but I'm going to change a part that needs to be changed. Oh, I'm not going to continue on generational trauma that doesn't need to be carried on. I'm going to grow up and I'm going to become me. I'm going to become the person that God wants me to be. Carl Jung terms this individuation. It's where you separate your identity from your parents, you see them objectively with all their flaws, and take away their godlike status. Can any of you ever remember the first time you realized your parents weren't perfect? I do. I vividly remember it. Because somebody in our church thought it'd be a good idea to put teenagers on the nominating committee. And if you don't know what nominating committee is, I don't have time to go there with you, but be grateful. And they put, and it, like, I really appreciated the thought of the church putting a teenager on the nominating committee, but if you're going to talk garbage about their parents in front of them, let them. And it was for the first time, I was like, oh, wow, not everybody thinks my parents are great. Not everybody. But it began a process of me becoming who I am going to be and understanding that while I am my mother and a part of my father, I am my own person too. And that the traumas that they experienced are not the ones that I have to pass on to my children too. Which comes to the final point. If you're not willing to admit the problems of, you cannot break the cycles of trauma. You can't do it. And can I just say a word to parents? You will do your child the biggest favor on earth if you are honest with them up front and tell them, I am not a perfect person. And if you will own mistakes that you have made in your life, the mistakes you've made with them, if you'll say, yeah, that wasn't the best thing I could have done, and I am sorry. But for so many of us as parents, we don't want to do that. We're like, no, I meant well. Well, you might have meant well, but it didn't go well. And it's okay to say, I'm sorry. I grew up with this trauma, and I don't want you to pass it on to the next generation. Until you're willing to take an honest look at the problems, the problematic parts of your parents, I'm not trying to tear them down. I'm not asking you to like make your parents into villains. Quite the opposite. I'm asking you to make them into human beings. And there's a few of you who are feeling really uncomfortable. And you're like, okay, Ken, you've been talking a lot of psychobabble here with me right now, and that's all and good. But I don't think that's biblical. The Bible tells me to honor my parents. Yes, it does. Have you read the Bible? Does the Bible only tell the good parts of the story? People say Adam and Eve were really good people. They did a lot of great things. There's some little thing somewhere. We're not going to talk about that. Abraham. Great man of faith. Let's just talk about the... No. The Bible is incredibly nuanced with the people in it. They did bad things. In fact, when you start reading through the book of Kings, you'll find there are kings that start off bad and end well, and kings that start off good and end bad, and some that start off good, go bad, come back to good. People are nuanced. The Bible says this, but watch out. Be careful to never forget what you yourself have seen. Do not let these memories escape from your mind as long as you live. And be sure to pass them on to your children and grandchildren. Never I stood before the Lord your God at Mount Sinai, where he told me, summon the people before me and I will personally instruct them. Then they will learn to fear me as long as they live, and they will teach their children to fear me also. This comes at the end of Moses' life, and he's telling them not to forget the good and the bad of Genesis, of Leviticus, of Numbers, of Deuteronomy. And he says it's important because you know what? If you don't do that, your children and your grandchildren won't know. They need to understand the good. They need to understand the bad. And so today, as I tell you, don't forget the people who raised you. More than sending a Mother's Day card, it's more than buying your dad his 52nd tie on Father's Day. That's the shallow end of remembering. If you want to go into the deep end of remembering the people who raised you, it involves recognizing the good, being honest about the bad, and then making deliberate choices that allow you to be good and to release what is bad. And that's why when you read the Bible, it says, don't forget. Remember. Because God has always wanted his children to love the people who raised them for what is good of their humanness.
Hi, this is Randy McGray, podcast producer and host here at Whole Life Church. Loving people into a lifelong friendship with God is our mission at the Whole Life Church, and our podcasts are designed to help facilitate conversations that help us grow together in that pursuit. Now that you've heard the message for this week, don't forget to check out the Whole Life takeaways for this message. Swipe up in today's show notes and join the conversation. Speaking of conversations, each Wednesday morning we take a closer look at the week's message. That's right, the one you just listened to. We discuss practical ways to apply spiritual lessons and ask honest questions about the issues we face as Christians, all focused through the lens of grace. Your voice is a welcomed addition to that conversation. We encourage your thoughts and your questions by sending a voicemail or text to 407-965-1607 or send an email to podcast@wholelife.church. You can find everything podcast related on our website, wholelife.church/podcast. And plan on spending every Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning with us as we bring you the Whole Life Church inspiration you love straight into your headphones. Thanks for listening and have a great week.